Podcast, Trent and Biz, as we talk Hawkeye football with you. Iowa fresh off a victory against Kent State, Colorado State on tap. One more time for a tune-up, Biz, before Big Ten play starts again with Maryland and, of course, Penn State. How you doing?
Doing good, Trent. You know, I'm not sure we learned much of anything from that Iowa win last week, other than, you know, we are what we thought we are, I guess. We're a very good defense, a very good special teams, and an offense that's definitely still a work in progress. But, you know, in general, I thought it was a good win against a pretty good team. Kent State was not a bad football team.
They're not. They can move the football, hit a couple of plays. Riley Massey certainly won. Maybe two of those were his fault. He gave it up, and it was funny listening to them just say, yeah, Phil Parker says sometimes he just guesses, and guessed wrong on a couple of those early in the football game. But overall, I like that quarterback. I thought the Crum kid was pretty good. You can see why at least he's on the radar for the NFL and maybe would be a late round draft pick. He's got some skill. He can move around. He's got a strong enough arm. But overall, it's more about Iowa certainly here. The defense, once again, though, really shuts things down, closes it up, and making the play on the goal line there, getting the fumble recovery. That thing could have got a little hairy if Kent State would have punched it in.
Yeah, it was. It felt like one of those. You and I have been in Kinnick plenty of times, and those games have gotten that bad vibe to them. And it certainly felt like that vibe was coming. Fortunately, we made the play when we needed to, and then from that point on, we kind of asserted our dominance down the stretch. But you know, I'm not saying the quarterback is better than Penix or Purdy, but he certainly played better than those two. I mean, right. I just thought Kent State, you know, they were very fundamentally sound. They tackled well. Obviously, our strategy was to get the ball out in space and get the ball out of Petrus's hands quickly. And I just thought they did a nice job of tackling. They made very few mistakes. You know, well-coached team. You know, those are the kind of games, if you're going to have cupcakes, you know, it's good to play against teams like that that at least are fundamentally sound and give you a challenge. Unlike Iowa State's cupcake on their schedule, UNLV was the opposite of all those things. So I'd rather have that challenge than just be handed a free victory where you learn absolutely nothing.
Learned a little something about the team and Spencer Petrus. There were some strides there. I think most importantly was one of the last throws of the day that he had, a little hitch and go as he went up top to Nico Rogani, a big gainer. Just have to see more than that, because the Spencer Petrus we've seen dating back to last season, it's 9 straight victories. That's all well and good, but he's going to have to still be better, in my mind, to beat Penn State, to go on the road and beat Wisconsin. They need more from him than what we've seen to this point. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it's fair, but I also thought he played well on Saturday. I think we're kind of I think we've gotten to a point where it's just trendy to pile on Spencer Petrus, and he's kind of the program whipping boy right now. But you know, if you're going to complain about him completing whatever he did, 70-75% of his passes and having zero turnovers, then you're probably going to complain every game, because he's never going to be. I mean, he is what he is at this point, Trent. And he's a guy that we've talked about in the past. He's got a cannon of an arm. He's going to make 2 or 3 great passes a game, and he's going to make 2 or 3 passes that look like you or me throwing the football. So it's never going to be perfect. But, you know, I agree. I mean, he's got to play better if we're going to realistically be 12-0 or 11-1. But I also don't think he's that far off. I thought he played a pretty good game in general on Saturday.
Running game got going. Goodson looked very solid. Now, it was pretty outman front overall for Kent State. Not a real big defensive line in front with that 3-3-5 stack that they run. But I really, the running game, it comes down to Ivory Kelly Martin, guy that we both are really rooting for, but put it on the ground 2 more times, lost a fumble in the game. Looks like they're going to go back with him, but you have to imagine that leash has got to be incredibly thin right now, just because Gavin Williams, LaShawn Williams, both those guys at least have enough to be the backup here. If Kelly Martin puts it on the turf again, I don't know how you can play him in a big spot going forward.
Yeah, this feels like kind of the last chance. And, you know, I think as you saw, I don't know if you've read the articles, there's a couple different articles out about him the last couple of days, and, you know, they all kind of say the same thing. He's obviously somebody that the coaching staff, he's earned the coaching staff's trust. His teammates like him. He's been in the program forever. You know, if anybody deserves a little longer leash, it's probably him. He's done everything they've asked him to do for 5 years, but I think you're right. This is probably the last straw. If he can't hold on to the ball now, it's probably time to move on.
With that, wide receivers still remain a concern. You know, we put a lot on Petras here, and before we cap off what we saw, Torrey Taylor, he was outstanding again. Though the fake punt, what in God's name? Kirk called it dumb, I think, 6 times in like 5 seconds earlier in the week during his press conference here. I just don't get the rationale.
You know, I think Kirk actually laid out the rationale in the middle of his rant. He hinted in there in the middle that it was to put it on tape. I think it's honestly to let people realize that, hey, we've still got some trick plays out there. And, you know, that's the only rationale I can think of. Is it a good rationale? No. But other than that, there's no – I mean, I'm trying to give the coaching staff the benefit of the doubt in thinking why they did it, because there really is no good reason, especially because the game was still in doubt at that point. It was 23-7, you know, early in the fourth. It was not a blowout by any means. So, I don't get it, but that's the only rationale I can think of, is that they wanted to put a you know, some trickeration on tape so that people going forward at least have to look into it. And maybe, you know, maybe they're thinking people are going to start, you know, trying to block, put a little more pressure on some of Torrey Taylor's punts, and this will maybe slow him down a little bit. I don't know. It didn't make any sense, to be honest with you.
It really didn't, but special teams excellent once again, and that's what's going to be the certainly the calling card of this football team going forward, just how they good are on that front. All right, Biz, mentioned wide receivers. You want to go to Stat Boy? He's got some info for us this week and the worries about that position.
Well, we actually, Trent, when you're going from cupcake number one to cupcake number two, you got to be a little creative on what to talk about in the podcast. You know, when you're talking about the week before Iowa State or even the week after Iowa State, there's plenty for us to chat about. But, you know, when you're going between Kent State and Colorado State, you got to be a little creative. So I gave Stat Boy not one, not two, but three assignments.
Oh, wow.
So heavy Stat Boy this week. So, first one, before we get into the wide receiver, this one's a short and quick one, but you mentioned the 9-game winning streak. Real simple question for you, Trent. How many times in Iowa history has Iowa football had double-digit winning streaks?
Double-digit winning streaks. Well, of course, 2015, that one jumps off.
That's the freebie, yes.
2002, no, had the winning streak. Try to think, 2004 leading into 2005. No, because I think they lost early on that season in 05, so I'm going to say that's a no. I'm going to say it's happened 3 times.
Well, your random guess is spot on correct. So you got the one correct, 2015. The end of the 08 year when we got rolling with Sean Green, and then early into 09, we won 13 straight, which that is the most that Iowa's ever had in the modern era, because the third time, Trent, you got to go back a full century. From 1920 to 1923, Iowa football was an absolute juggernaut.
Howard Jones.
Straight, 20 straight with the Duke Slater-led squad in 21, and in 22 we went undefeated. And some things never changed, Trent, because that team or those teams leaned heavily on the defense. You ready to hear how many points they gave up in those 20 games?
I'm going to guess this is going to be pretty dominant in a different era of football.
Yeah, well, you know, this is kind of like, I think you and I both listen to the Solid Verbal occasionally. Mm-hmm. It's when they read the drive chart and they go through it. Well, this is the points chart for these 20 wins. 0, 7, 10, 14, 7, 2, 6, 7, 0, 0, 0, 0, 7, 0, 14, 9, 3, 0, 3, and 0. So that was the original steel curtain back then. They gave up less than 100 points total in those 20 games.
Not too bad. No. Sign up for that again this season.
We also had our annual whooping boy. We played Knox College each year, Trent, and we whooped up on them pretty good. Most of the scores in that era were, you know, if you scored 21 points, you were running it up on teams. But not against Knox. We beat them 52-14, 61-0, and 44-3. So some good stat boy info to tell you that only once basically in the last 100 years, or twice in the last 100 years, have we won 10 games in a row. So assuming we don't stub our foot or shoot ourselves in the foot and stub our toe this Saturday, this should be the fourth time.
Should do that. Iowa currently a 23-point favorite against the Rams from Colorado State. Speaking of that, Stat Boy went to work on some Mountain West. What's going on here with Colorado State coming to town?
Well, Mountain West, that's the third assignment for Stat Boy. The second one was your wide receiver question. Uh-huh. So we'll dig into that because, you know, Trent, you and I can never be 100% positive about the Hawks. No. We've always got to have a little concern. Last week, my concern was that Tyler Goodson wasn't running very well, and he alleviated those concerns last week. So this week, I'll turn the concerns to wide receivers. So you ready to chat wide receivers?
I got concerns there. I'd like to hear what Stat Boy dug up.
Well, what I told him was that at this point, three games into the year, a quarter of the season in, we're not on pace to have any wide receivers catch more than 300 yards. Reganey has 75 yards receiving, and that's after his 50-yard catch. Tracy has 70 yards receiving. Chuck Jones has 38, and Jackson Ritter is fourth at 17 yards receiving. So unless we crank it up a notch, we're looking at some all-time lows when it comes to receiving yards, or at least in the Hayden Ferentz modern era. So you want to take a guess how many times in the Hayden and Kirk eras that we've had a receiver go for less than 400 yards as our top receiver?
Well, we talked about 81. Some of those numbers were pretty hideous. Let's say three times.
Once. Only once have we not had a receiver hit the 400-yard mark. That was 2013. Kevontae Martin Manley got to 388 yards. So at the pace we're going right now, we're looking at historically low in the modern era. So, but in true Stat Boy fashion, he went past the modern era trend, and we've talked about this in the past. And this is a great trip down memory lane here. This, you want to ready for some unbelievable statistics on how inept our passing game was in the 70s?
I can't wait for this, and I know your dad's on the edge of his seat too.
This is pretty glorious, Trent. So the 4 years before Hayden took over, 1975 to 1978, we're going to focus on those 4 years because they are just some mind-boggling numbers. 1975, our leading receiver that year had 8 catches. 8. Our quarterbacks that year, Trent, we had a couple of them, went back and forth between 2 quarterbacks. These are their season stats. 33 for 125. So they completed 26% of their passes, 3 touchdowns, 10 picks, and threw for less than 600 yards. So not good. Stat Boy looked it up. We were running the wing T then, and we were about the only team still doing it. And the rationale for doing it was that we figured no one else was doing it, so it'd be confusing. We were the last team to hold out and run the wing T. So 1976, the completion percentage goes up a little bit, but across the board, mind-bogglingly bad stats again. The reception leader jumps from 8 the year before to 12. So somebody caught 12 passes, so at least more than one a game. But C for 163, 5 touchdowns, 14 picks.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. 77 was really a breakout year for the offense. 77 is kind of the outlier here. They did have someone catch 26 passes. Quarterbacks threw for slightly over 50%, 100 for 197, but still a brutal touchdown-to-interception ratio of 6 to 16. So then when you start thinking, well, maybe we're turning things in the right direction. Nope, Trent, 1978, historically bad again. Leading receiver had 14 catches. We tried out 4 different quarterbacks that year. Those quarterbacks went a total of 84 for 210, 3 touchdowns, 17 interceptions on the year.
I can't win many games doing that.
No. So when you add it up, Trent, the 4 years total, we have a 4-year total of 17 passing touchdowns, 57 interceptions and 39% completions.
Well, Bob Cummings, not exactly a superstar.
Yeah, so the two things you take out of this, Trent, like we said before, things could be a whole lot worse than Spencer Petras, and thank God for Hayden Fry for bringing us into, you know, not only respectability, but into the modern era of football. So so when we talk wide receivers, Trent, things could get worse, but they need to get better.
We saw a lot of Arlen Bruce. We saw Keegan Johnson out there. We saw those guys on the field more, hopeful that those guys can add an extra element here. And more than anything, Johnson, a big receiver. Jackson Ritter, I don't hate the guy. Just I want to see more of the youngsters.
Well, my biggest worry, I mean, obviously, two of the three games I've seen him live and in person, and you get a much better view of the field than on TV. And it's not like Spencer Petras is missing people that are just running wide open. Mm-hmm. We're just not getting a lot of separation. I mean, that's the other thing with Spencer Petras. You can be critical all you want, but, you know, it's not like last year when he was overthrowing wide open guys. This year, you know, there hasn't been a ton of opportunities, and you know, I just worry maybe, you know, we took for granted how good Amir Smith-Marset and Brandon Smith were, because I don't think we have that guy to take the top off the defense, and I don't think there's a lot of fear in secondaries right now with our wide receivers.
That's fair to say, and we will see what more can be unleashed. I've seen some guys running open, but schematically, you kind of go back. It's not goddamn Greg Davis. We're not to GD anymore, but
I've never heard that before. So I like that one.
GD. Yeah, that's that was one of the monikers of Greg Davis. And we're not there yet, but frustration levels continue to mount, even with the team ranked fifth in the country. All right, one more from Statboy.
So the part three of the Statboy trifecta, we're playing, obviously, Colorado State this week, which is a rarity, Trent. We don't play the Mountain West all that often. We play the MAC a lot. But the Mountain West is a rarity. Over the years, our record against the Mountain West is 9-1-1, and that includes bowl games.
Mm-hmm.
We've never played Colorado State. We've played five current members of the Mountain West. Can you name the five members that we've played over the years? Four of them I think you should be able to get.
Yes, we played Wyoming, Josh Allen, a few years back.
That's one.
Played Utah State when Clinton Solomon had a ridiculous catch early in his career before he left and came back.
That's two.
Boise, no. New Mexico, no. Air Force, not in recent history. San Diego, Fresno. Nevada's on the schedule in the future.
Nevada's next year, I think, but not yet.
Oh, of course, Hawaii.
Hawaii four times, and we'll get into that in a minute. So that's the third. There's one more. I'll give you a hint. One more you should be able to get because it was a bowl game victory.
A bowl game victory against a current member of the Mountain. Oh, San Diego State Holiday Bowl, of course.
Yep, San Diego State Holiday Bowl. So the fifth one, you said the name, and you were correct. You haven't played them in the modern era, but we did play Air Force way back in 1958.
Okay.
So, and that was a tie. We tied Air Force 13-13. The other nine, the wins, we beat Hawaii three times. We beat Wyoming three times, once back in the 50s. We beat Utah State twice, once back in the 50s. And then the last second field goal win against San Diego State. So there's the nine wins. Do you remember the one loss?
Hawaii.
At Hawaii.
I looked
into it.
Jason Elam with the field goal to win it, the longtime NFL kicker. That was a pretty good Hawaii team, actually.
Damn it, Trent. That was my quiz question for you.
I beat you to it.
So 1988, yeah, we lose 27-24. Jason Elam with the game winner. But we actually drove down the field and had a chance to tie. 44-yard field goal, short, with 21 seconds left. Didn't have a distance to get there from 44. We were ranked ninth going into that year, and it was the beginning of one of the more frustrating years in Iowa football because that was a 6-4-3 year. So,
if I remember correctly, for us up in North Iowa, that game was not. I'm sure it was a late game. I don't remember exactly what time, but I want to say it was on replay at like 11 o'clock. I just remember I had it on tape. I had it on a VCR, and we taped it, watched it the next day, whatever it was. So I remember, but I want to say like KIMT played it at like 11 o'clock at night, something like that. Even could have been live out there, you never know. But remember getting up, excited. Of course, I was going to win. They're going to beat Hawaii because I'm 9 years old. And that's what they always do against crap teams like this. And then watching that bloodbath. It was ugly. There were some officiating gaffes, if I remember correctly, as well.
There was, from what I could see, there was apparently a holding, non-holding call that cost us late in the game. Okay. We drove down inside the 15-yard line, threw a touchdown to win the game, and it was a kind of a delayed flag that was very controversial, apparently. It wasn't until the catch was made that they decided, oh, by the way, there was a holding. So, yeah, but don't let it get to the last 30 seconds against Hawaii when you're ranked ninth in the nation, and you don't have to deal with that, I guess. But hopefully you burned that tape afterwards.
I don't think it made the move with me. I don't think it went very far. So there's Mountain West. It's Colorado State this week. And with that, Biz, are you ready to make some picks for this week?
I am. I'm continuing to roll. I think I'm like, what, 6-2-1 on the year now?
Is that what it is, 6-2-1? You went, did you go 2-1 or 3-0 last week?
I went 3-0 week one, and then I went the rare 1-1-1, and I went 2-1 last week.
All right, so you're making money for us, all right? That's good. So 6-2-1 overall this season.
You went 2-1 as well, didn't you?
I had a winning week. I'm over .500. I'm 5-4 against the number. 55%. Biz, professionals, they would sign up for 55%. That's how you make money.
Well, we've got plenty of time to regress back to the mean here, Trent.
Very true. Let's start with Iowa. They are favored by 23 against Colorado State. Biz, I'm going back to the well again. This Colorado State team, we talked about it last week. They're much worse than Kent State. They can't throw the football. They have one guy that can catch the ball. It's a tight end who is very good himself, but their quarterback stinks. Their defense isn't very good. I think this one is one where we do see that downfield passing game. Now, I'm looking at something in the range of 41-7, 44-3. I think this is just an absolute throttling.
Well, you know the old saying, Trent, good teams win, great teams cover.
Yeah.
We found a way to cover last week. We're 3-0 on the year, so I'm there with you. I'm going to ride the wave. Give me Iowa minus 23. I agree with you. I think Colorado State's bad. I honestly think they're going to struggle to put up any points against this. They're very stubborn. They like to run the ball. I just don't see them running the ball well against this. Their quarterback's bad. They've got a good tight end and not much else. So I can see it actually being pretty similar to last week as far as slow start, but I think something similar. So, I see something like 31-3. So give me minus 23, and we'll ride the wave.
Try to go back-to-back with us both taking the Hawks against the number. From that, we go to the big national game of the week we're looking at. It is 11 o'clock kickoff on Big Fox. Wisconsin against Notre Dame. It'll be in Soldier Field. Did your father-in-law get tickets with this, with his Bears tickets?
Not that I know of. He's a diehard Bears fan, but he's pretty clueless when it comes to college football. So my guess is no, but we've been. Did you go to both Soldier Field games against NIU?
Yeah. One of them I showed up on my own, had a long walk to get to Soldier Field, but yeah, I had a good time there.
So the rumor is we may be going back to Soldier Field in a couple of years. Did you see with Northwestern getting an insane donation from the Ryan family, they're going to have to shut the field down for a year or two, and the rumor is they may use Soldier Field. So that may be a reason to go back and watch the Hawks in the spaceship.
That wouldn't be bad. I'd enjoy that one, and if it's not the spaceship, maybe it'd be Wrigley Field. They played there, against Illinois a few years back. So it'll be a different experience, and it's got to be better than Ryan Field. That place stinks. Let's go to Soldier, though, for this one. Notre Dame getting 6 and the hook. This is an easy one for me. I know people are starting to get scared off that line, moving back towards a touchdown. Wisconsin's just a lot better football team. In fact, if they had Jack Cohn, they would beat Penn State in week one. But Notre Dame offensive line stinks. Their left tackle, they're down to their third teamer. Their defensive line isn't very good. And it's Notre Dame. That's usually their strength here. Wisconsin, better defensively, better offensive line, not better quarterback, but still a better football team. They win it 28-17. I'll lay the points with the Badgers.
Well, Trent, this is one of our first disagrees of the year. I give me Notre Dame plus 6.5. I've got kind of the opposite thinking here. I'm just not sure Wisconsin's as good as everybody pretends they are. I'm not sold on Graham Mertz at all. And on the flip side, the one thing Notre Dame has done the last couple of years, what Brian Kelly has done, other than against Alabama, they're competitive against everybody. They've given Clemson some scares. I think Wisconsin wins this game. I agree with you. I think Wisconsin's the better team, but I'm not sure Wisconsin right now is in any sort of mindset to be beating top five or top 10 teams by more than a touchdown. So if you're going to give me 6.5 and what I think is going to be a tight game, I'll take the points and hope Notre Dame can somehow keep it together and lose by four instead of seven or more.
That's what you're shooting for. All right.
I will say, kind of like last week, same thing I said about Auburn and Penn State. Don't feel overly confident about this. And honestly, I got lucky on the Penn State side last week. So let's hope to get lucky again this week.
Let's go to the pick of the week, our best bet for the week, the one we like most. Biz, you lead this one off.
Well, this is a pick that I think I jumped on last year, and I'll jump back on the train this year. Give me the Arkansas Razorbacks plus 6. I saw that Sam Pittman is some ridiculous, like 77% against the spread since he became a head coach. Plus, our number one fan, Arkansas Allie, I like to throw her a bone at least once a year. So, woo pig suey. Give me the Razorbacks. I'm not sure Texas A&M is all that good. I think Arkansas crowd's going to be lit for this game and fired up. Arkansas may not win, but I think they will keep it very close.
Bizgard calling the Hogs. All right, I'm going to make a call down to the bell, the Cowbells, Mississippi State and Stark Vegas. Brings in LSU. Remember a year ago, that's how the season kicked off. It was in Baton Rouge, and it was an ugly defensive performance out of LSU. Feels like maybe there's a conversation, this is going to be payback for LSU. I'm not buying it. That defense still isn't very good. Beating, Central Michigan doesn't do a whole lot here. Mississippi State, they got screwed last week in that loss to Memphis. A ball that was downed, and then a kid picks it up for Memphis and runs it back for a touchdown. I just think Mississippi State's the better team. I'm getting a free 2.5. Sign me up, Bulldogs, plus the 2 in the hook.
You're talking yourself in circles here, Trent. 2 weeks ago, you picked NC State against Mississippi State. You said they weren't any good. Now you're feeling good that they can take on LSU and come away with victory, huh?
That's where we're going. Well, I watched that game because I had a bet on it. Mississippi State, they're the better team. Better than I anticipated. Leach's boys, they're going to get it done here.
I feel like in general, but never once have I bet on a Mike Leach team and felt good about it. You just never know what you're going to get with Mike Leach.
Very true. That guy is a weird, weird duck. All right, Biz, before we get out of here each and every week, we always finish up with Biz's Beat.
Hey, kids, gather around for Biz's Beat of the day. Okay, here's Biz's Beat of the day.
Sadly, Trent, Biz's Beat is a retread of a couple weeks ago, and I'd like to recant my compliment to the Iowa marketing department. As I told you a few weeks ago, they did one of the first new and original things that they've done in forever in putting on the Freddie Mercury chant. Well, they decided apparently that they didn't like when the crowd likes chants because they didn't do it on Saturday, and down the stretch, it was just painful in Kinnick. End of the third quarter, I don't know if you remember, but, you know, third quarter ends, so you got 3.5 minutes of break there. First play in, Ethan Herkett gets hurt. They go to another break. 2 plays later, Kent State punts, so they go to another break. So you were talking 20, 30 seconds of gameplay that took 20 minutes of time. And it was like the marketing department had just decided they were out of ideas. They didn't do a single thing during that time. So it was 80, hot, and just listening to advertisements for the Case IH Red Zone. So it was, you know, I recant my compliment to them from 2 weeks ago. I'm hoping somebody in the department amazingly listens to our podcast and realizes, wait, remember that thing we did that was good? Let's do it again. So I'm not holding my breath that they will, but let's hope maybe somebody's listening.
Let's hope that's the case. Oh, one more Biz before we get out of here. You said that I had to watch the 86 Mets documentary. Already had it on the DVR. I flew through all 4. Boy, that was fun.
Yeah. Hopefully you didn't watch it with your kids in the area. No, Lenny Dykstra is not suitable for children.
That's very true. That's the team you grew up rooting for.
Exactly. Well, the thing is, I've read, you know, the Jeff Perlman book and a few other things in there, but I had forgotten just how great the celebration was when they made it to the playoffs. That was my favorite part of the whole documentary, was that literally they just let 20,000 people run out on the field and just destroy Shea Stadium. I mean, they just were taking huge chunks of the turf. People were trying to dig up home plate. Somebody's running around screaming that he stole Keith Hernandez's hat. I mean, that was a different era, Trent. And can you imagine now if one guy tries to get on the field, he is instantly beaten. So back then it was mostly encouraged. Yeah, you want to go out there and steal third base, go for it.
Different world, more fun world. I am sure about that. Biz, good stuff. We will do it again next week and get ready. It'll be a short week with Maryland on tap on Friday.
Go Hawks.